Dune occupied his mind by calculating how far underground he was. From the river to the ceiling of the main tunnel, must be 30 feet or so, he thought. Above that were the storerooms, which occupied a layer at least 20 feet high. So that meant he was 50 feet underground, with tons of earth and rock and buildings above him. The thought made him tense up his shoulders. He cast a quick glance upward, as if all that weight might collapse onto his head. "Here we are," said Arlen. She was standing next to a leak that spurted a stream of water straight out from the wall. "We have to turn the shutoff valve, take the pipe apart, put on a new connector, and stick it back together again." With wrenches, hammers, washers, and black goop, they did this, getting soaked in the process. It took them most of the morning, and proved to Dune that the city was in even worse shape than he'd suspected. Not only were the lights about to fail, and the supplies about to run out, but the water system was breaking down. The whole city was crumbling, and what was anyone doing about it? When the lunch break came, Arlen took her lunch sack from a pocket in her tool belt and went off to meet some friends a few tunnels away. "You stay right here and wait until I get back," she said as she left. "If you wander around, you'll get lost." But Dune set out as soon as she disappeared. Using his map, he found his way back to the main tunnel, then hurried to the east end. He wasn't going to wait for special permission to see the generator. He was pretty sure he could find a way to get in on his own, and he did. He simply stood by the door and waited for someone to come out. Quite soon, a stout woman carrying a lunch sack pushed open the door and walked away. She didn't notice him. Before the door could close again, Dune slipped inside. Such a horrendous noise met him that he staggered backward a few steps. It was an ear-splitting, growling, grinding, screaming noise, shot through with a hoarse, rackety-rackety sound, and underscored with a deep chugga-chugga-chugga. Dune clapped his hands over his ears and stepped forward. In front of him was a gigantic black machine, two stories high. It was vibrating so hard, it looked as if it might explode any second. Several people wearing earmuffs were busy around it. None of them noticed him come in. He tapped one of them on the shoulder, and the person jumped and whirled around. He was an old man, Dune saw, with a deeply lined brown face. "I want to learn about the generator!" Dune screamed, but he might as well have saved his breath. No one could be heard in the uproar. The old man glared at him, made a shooing motion with his hand, and turned back to work. Dune stood and watched for a while. Beside the huge machine were ladders on wheels that the workers pushed back and forth and climbed up on to reach the high parts. All over the room, greasy-looking cans and tools littered the floor. Against the wall stood big bins, holding every kind of bolt and screw and gear and lever and rod and tube, all of them black with age and jumbled together. The workers scurried between the bins and the generator, or simply stood and watched the thing shake. After a few minutes, Dune left. He was horrified. All his life, he had studied how things worked. It was one of his favorite things to do. He could take apart an old watch and put it back together exactly as it had been. He understood how the faucets in the sink worked. He'd fixed the toilet many times. He'd made a wheeled cart out of the parts of an old armchair. He even had a hazy idea of what was going on in the refrigerator. He was proud of his mechanical talent. There was only one thing he didn't understand at all, and that was electricity. What was the power that ran through the wires and into the light bulbs? Where did it come from? He had thought that if he could just get a look at the generator, he would have the clue he needed. From there, he could begin to work on a solution that would keep the lights of Ember burning. But one glimpse of the generator showed him how foolish he was. He'd expected to see something whose workings he could understand. A wheel turning, a spark being struck, some wires that led from one point to another. But this monstrous roaring thing, he wondered if anyone understood how it worked. It looked as if all they were doing was trying to keep it from flying apart. As it turned out, he was right. When the day was over and he was upstairs taking off his boots and slicker, he saw the old man from the generator room and went to talk to him. "Can you explain to me about the generator?" he asked. "Can you tell me how it works?" The old man just sighed.
"All I know is, the river makes it go."
"But how?" The man shrugged.
"Oh, who knows? Our job is just to keep it from breaking down. If a part breaks, we got to put on a new one. If a part freezes up, we got to oil it."
He wiped his hand wearily across his forehead, leaving a streak of black grease.
"I've been working on the generator for 20 years. It's always managed to chug along, but this year, I don't know. The thing seems to break down every couple minutes."
He cracked a wry smile.
"Course, I hear we might run out of light bulbs before that, and it won't matter if the generator works or not."
Running out of light bulbs, running out of power, running out of time. Disaster was right around the corner. That's what Dune was thinking about when he stopped outside the gathering hall on his way home and saw Lina on the roof. She looked so free and happy up there. He didn't know why she was on the roof, but he wasn't surprised. It was the kind of thing she did, turning up in unexpected places. And now that she was a messenger, she could go just about anywhere. But how could she be so lighthearted when everything was falling apart?